Welcome back to another episode of Suds and Cinema. My name's Kyle.
I'm Josh.
Surprise, motherfuckers, I'm back.
This is episode 191, and tonight we are reviewing Godzilla, Kong, a New Empire? Oh, The New Empire.
The New Empire.
Always get that wrong. Plus some other stuff we have been watching. We are missing one of us. Jacob is in Europe. Globetrotting
again.
He is not here for this review, but maybe next week he'll catch up with it. We can get his thoughts. We will see. But in the meantime, how you doing? How is everything going?
Good. Nothing different than yesterday.
That nope. Is true. Well, it's a new month.
It is a new month. That is about the only difference. It was sunny out today. So that was nice.
Should we put a question out to the listeners?
Yes.
Is this... Josh and I had an experience yesterday on the Lord's Day.
Yes.
He is risen.
The Lords of Lord's Days.
The Lordiest of Lord's Days.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, if you are at a bar with your child... Is it anybody's business or the waitress's business to ask who's driving the kid home?
Yeah. What a crazy experience.
What do you guys think? Send in your answers. Is it anybody's business to wonder?
Yes. And then there's even more context that could be brought up, but
there is more context.
We'll leave it at the very basic question.
Yeah, the very
we don't want
to sway your answers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
No biases. And if you want to add context to your answer, then that's fine too. But would love to hear from you. Love to hear from you all. But yeah, that was interesting to say the least.
Yeah, it was like no matter what. I mean, yeah, we'll leave it. We'll leave the bias out. We'll talk about it next week, and then maybe Jacob can.
Yeah, we'll see.
Chime in as well.
Yeah, exactly. We can tell the story to Jacob, give the full story, full context, and then we'll see what everyone's saying. So, okay, cool. Well, let's get into our beers then.
I'm very thirsty.
We have some different beers. You want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
Mine is it's called Slightly Stupid. And it is a fruit lager from Buzzrock Brewing Company. It says on the description on the can. Oh, wait, where is it? Where'd it go? Oh, it's on the top. It says brewed with stupid fruits, tangerine, malt, and hops. So let's get the X, because that one sucks. So let's get the actual description up here. So it's called Slightly Stupid Summer Tangy Haze is the actual full name of it. And description reads, tangerine dream for summer sipping or crushing. With a crisp, easy drinking lager base plus a generous bounty of real tangerine, this lager is easy to drink one or ten of. Mandarina Bavaria hops impart plenty of tangerine aromas to go along with fresh tangerines, which impart even more tangerine aroma and tangerine flavor. Tangerine exclamation point. 200 check-ins only, and it's got a 3.62, so not great, but it could be divisive. Who's to say? But 5.9% ABV and 8 IBUs. And they're out of Torrance, California. Buzzrock Brewing.
All right. I have, on the complete opposite spectrum of that, Mass Appeal, which is from Arrow Lodge Brewing in collaboration with Radiant Beer Co. Arrow Lodge is out of Covina, California, and Mass Appeal is an Imperial / Double Pastry Stout.
Whoa.
Clocking in at 9.8% ABV. Details read, pastry stout with banana, vanilla, and cocoa nibs. An Arrow Lodge Radiant Beer Co. collab. Okay, yeah, we knew that.
Yeah, thanks.
Radiant is, let me have to look them up because they don't have the tag on here. Radiant Beer Co. is out of Anaheim, California. So both California beers, not surprising, coming from Craft Beer Kings, because it seems like every beer they send is pretty much out of California.
Yeah.
But, yeah, of course, you know, had to go with, was going to drink a stout for this episode anyway, but we didn't record together, and that one stout was a bomber. And then I was like, oh, I think I have another stout with the banana, because monkeys love bananas.
There you go. Huge. And mine has a skull on the cover.
Ooh.
And it's on a beach, so Skull Island.
King Kong. Well, we're not reviewing that, but he is from Skull Island. He's from there. So there you go. All right. Excited to try this. Let's crack into them.
Let's get into them.
Now, most people don't like banana flavored things. I love a little banana. I love a little banana in a beer, though.
You love bananas in your holes.
Oh yeah.
All holes. Okay, so mine is light in color. Obviously, thought it was going to be because it is brewed as an easy drinking lager base, whatever that means. But it is definitely cloudy, I'm assuming from the tangerine. But it looks delicious. Very carbonated. My glass is going crazy. Yours is probably dark.
Mm-hmm. Pitch black. Not too syrupy, but I did have a sip. Definitely getting the vanilla and cocoa. Not getting a lot of banana, which is sad.
Sad.
Like, if this was just a straight-up stout with vanilla and cocoa, like, yeah, they nailed it, and it is really good. But I kind of want that banana. And it's throwing me off because
maybe,
I was expecting the banana.
Maybe you let it warm up a little bit. Because bananas come out when it's warmer.
Okay, it is, like, ice cold. I just took it out of the fridge, so good call.
Yeah, let it sit for a few. Like,
it's a sipper anyway, so yeah. I'll be drinking it the whole show.
Yeah, so cue, like, make a mental note in your head that when you finish that beer, you're gonna
give it the actual rating.
Yeah, give it the full rating.
Okay. Where you're at. All right. Well, right now it's very good.
Beers together.
Oh, over the weekend. Yes, we did.
That we both wished.
Yeah. I mean, if we're counting everything, we have more than a couple.
Yeah. Both of which we both agreed were on the lighter side. We wanted them more imperial. So at least you have
stout,
that. Is this stout at least stoutier?
Yes, this is stoutier. And yeah, which is surprising because that s'mores stout that I had from Untitled Art was like amazing. I gave it a 5. And then I was like, okay, this is chocolate mousse, kind of similar, but you know, it's another double stout from them. Thought it would be closer to that. And it just was, way off for some reason. I mean, still good, decent, but like not like that. I think my expectations were just so high from the s'mores stout.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've had a few things from them.
Mm-hmm.
I like them quite a bit. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm like kind of like, I want my stouts now to be like 12%.
Yeah.
Like they need to be
that fucking
big fucking beers.
15% stout we had in Sheboygan that poured like motor oil. Remember that?
Yeah. Or nightmare fuel.
Like the end of the night too. It was so, God, that was a terrible idea, but
yeah, that was horrible what we did. Drinking all day and then deciding to crack open Imperial Stouts that night.
Yeah, when we're already fucked up.
And like,
can't imagine Evan not enjoying getting fucked up.
Tired as fuck. I remember just passing out at like 9 o'clock.
Oh yeah, I don't even think I finished my pour that you guys gave me because, I was so tired and we were in the sun all day and drinking all day.
Yeah, and activities.
Yeah. and activities.
We were so out of breath after that one fucking bat game or whatever.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, anything else? Or what? You didn't really talk about your beer.
Mine is actually very delicious. Oh. And it's extremely crushable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get the 369 because it's not, like, going to blow you away, but...
One is a lager, too. Like,
yeah, it's exactly what you'd expect it to be. Literally exactly what you think it'd be.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. It's like, do you like Tangerine Space Machine?
I do.
So it's like a light, it'd be like a light version of that. Hmm. Like, it has the same flavor, basically, just no IPA.
Yeah, I'd be interested to try it, because you said it was like, it's a lager, but it was like cloudy, which is weird, because like usually lagers, even with flavor, they are like crystal clear.
Yeah,
because like
they're sitting for so long.
There's no opaque. Yeah, yeah. So I would be interested to try that sometime. But
yeah, if you can find it. I mean, I don't know if you ever...
I know, if you got it in your shipment, it's probably going to be impossible to find here in a store, but...
Especially, I mean, I don't know how big this brewery is. They can't be too small if they're, you know, distributing that far.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, no, it's huge.
The brewery is huge?
Yeah, the brewery is huge, yes. Looks like they're like almost like a chain, though.
A chain?
Yeah, it's like you go to the webpage and it's called the Brews Hall. It's got like 5 restaurants.
Hmm.
Like in the same, I don't know.
Kind of like BJ's, but probably better.
Yeah, no, this is better than anything BJ's did.
Oh,
did you get the Colin Cowherd beer?
Cowherd beer. What?
Yeah, it's called the Herd. It's like a Pilsner. Did you guys get that one?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Okay. Yeah, yours was like completely different. Even though, or was that your second shipment? Because you did 2 shipments right before canceling that.
Yes. Yeah.
So that might have been your second one.
I think it was the second one. I do think it was the second one, because I'm pretty sure we drank all the first one on the show. At least I got through the first one, I think, on the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, delicious, crushability, very high, 4.5 probably, 5.
Mm.
Like, it is extremely crushable, and I could see myself drinking a lot of these.
What was the ABV on that again?
5.9, which is pretty high.
Yeah, for a lager, for sure. That's perfect.
It drinks way lighter than Blood Orange Honey, Sheboygan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like 6.2, which is really high for that style too. But
yeah,
it definitely drinks lot. It's a lot lighter than that.
Oberon like 5.7?
5.7, 5.8, yeah. So it's more than, and this is easier to drink than Oberon. It tastes lighter than both of those, like quite a bit. Like, this tastes like a light beer.
Yeah. But with the flavor.
I mean, it's delicious, yeah. Mm. Very good. Very, very good.
Well, glad to
probably
hear
4-star? I think we can give it a 4-star.
Wow.
Slightly All stupid right. Summer tangy haze.
Well, I shouldn't have to say, but mine is not very crushable. And we are holding out on the rating, so.
Yes.
That's about all I have to say on mine.
You're gatekeeping for now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Ready to get into the feature review?
Yes.
All right. We're talking Godzilla Kong, The New Empire. Godzilla Kong is directed by Adam Wingard. It is written by Terry Rossio, Simon Barrett, Jeremy Slater, and Adam Wingard. Stars Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens, and Kaylee Hodel. Plot synopsis reads, two ancient titans, Godzilla and Kong, clash in an epic battle as humans unravel their intertwined origins and connection to Skull Island's mysteries. What did you think of Godzilla Kong, The New Empire?
I thought it was exactly what I thought it would be. Like, but much more epic. Like, I had just rewatched the first one before this, and
you mean Godzilla or
no?
Or
no, you're talking about Godzilla v. Kong. Yes.
Okay. So
the first of the Adam Wingard.
Gotcha. Well, they're calling this the Monsterverse now, and it would be like the fourth or fifth in that, because we have Godzilla. I think Godzilla King of Monsters, Kong Skull Island, fifth. Godzilla V Kong. So this is fifth, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just saw, actually, you bring that up. I just saw a thing on like Facebook or something that showed both the audience score and the critic score for mm-hmm. all of them. And surprisingly, this one had the same rating as, or maybe even higher than the original Godzilla. The critics hated that for some reason.
Really? The first one?
Yeah. Which was arguably the best one.
Though. Yeah.
Definitely the best. I mean, I think it's pretty unanimously the best one, but.
Yeah. On Metascore, it's 47 versus 62. And they have the same number of ratings in, so.
For which one? This one?
Yeah, Godzilla would be 62. Yeah, this
was the tomato meter or whatever.
47, yeah. No. Not tomatoes. This is Metascore.
Right. I'm saying this, what I saw. Oh, that was the,
okay, gotcha, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you and I went to go see it together. Mm-hmm. It was almost a sold-out show.
It was, yeah.
So
we did. Well, we got there and they said it's been, they're like, you're lucky you bought them ahead of time because it was sold out, I think.
Yeah, but what every seat wasn't full.
Yeah, that always happens though. If it's sold out, there's always like still a few seats empty.
They sell out. What does they consider sell out? Like 85% capacity or something?
Oh, well, I don't know if it. Like maybe like they were standard? Sold out. Maybe people did the same thing. They bought tickets ahead of time and then didn't show up or something. I mean, I did that when I thought we were going to see it Thursday. I bought used my free tickets and I didn't even go. So that seat was considered taken.
Right. It's true. Well, either way, definitely the blockbuster that it
mm-hmm.
was made out to be. I mean, it's an eye candy, turn your brain off movie. I love Adam Wingard and his style, and it's still here in this one. He loves his purples and pinks. And
yeah, he loves the blues. 80s neon aesthetic and the music too.
And the music, that. Everything. Yeah, that's, and I love the 80s. Like, I'm a huge mm-hmm. 80s aesthetic fan. Like, I love everything about the 80s. I think it was just such a cool time, such a cool era. Music was great, outfits, style, I mean, all of it. And Adam Wingard brings that out in every one of his movies. So I think that's why I'm like, I don't think he's groundbreaking by any means. I mean, the best film of his, I think, is Your Next by quite a bit. And then the rest of them are like not like good to not so like almost great. And I just, he's like, I have a soft spot for him. But you and I had talked about this yesterday. We almost got into a discussion about this movie and we held off. Almost. And we wanted to say that it did fly by. We both agreed that it flew by. Mm-hmm. And I think that is due in part to the fact that there's three storylines you're kind of following. And when you have movies like that do that, I feel like it tends to like make it seem so much shorter because you're dealing with like 10-minute intervals of different scenery. So when you're kind of bouncing back and forth, I feel like it makes it like really fly by. I feel like there was a movie that we reviewed not that long ago that was kind of similar. And I think mm-hmm. The Irishman does a pretty good job actually of, it's like 3.5 hours long and it feels like a lot shorter than that because you're kind of going through like different sections where they're each an hour versus one long drawn out continuous movie. So mm-hmm. I think that it flew by. This was, I mean, it clocked right under 2 hours, I think.
Yeah, 155, I think.
Yeah, and it didn't feel anywhere near 2 hours.
Yeah.
It was like very quick. And I think a lot of that has to do with the pacing. I mean, it was pretty much balls to the wall the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once the story gets going, it doesn't really let up. There's no, I don't think there's really a lull in action or anything.
No, not at all. And production-wise, I mean, this one visually looked a lot better than even the 2021 version. I do think the story was rushed a bit. Like it kind of felt like you were like certain, these huge like revelations or like groundbreaking things that should be like more rewarding were kind of just like, you just like went to the next storyline and they were like, this is boom, 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 boom. And you're like, okay. Oh, yeah. So you just kind of like, you're just already in the moment versus like there's having a build up to the moment. Like you're just kind of right there. So like that kind of didn't suck, but it was kind of meh. I mean, that was definitely the worst part about it. So overall though, I think it's exactly what I expected. I think it's right in line with the last one and I liked it just enough to, you know, it was an enjoyable experience.
Very cool. Yeah, I don't know if I would say I liked it or definitely not loved it, but I think the best part is that what you mentioned, the pacing and how once it gets rolling into the action, like it doesn't stop and, you know, it definitely delivers on the promise of more monsters and, you know, bigger fight scenes and all that stuff. But I do think that one of the problems is I don't think any scene lived up to the first Godzilla v. Kong, that fight scene Hong Kong something.
Oh, the fight between them?
Well, and then they fight Mechagodzilla.
Right, but
there's nothing in this that lives up to that, I don't think. I thought, like, their fight was pretty cool, but, like, the end was, I think, pretty anticlimactic for me.
Yeah, the actual biggest fight was...
Yeah.
I think the smaller fights in between were better than that.
Exactly.
Like, the anti-gravity fight was pretty cool.
Well, I think that's a part of the end, isn't it? Well, I guess that leads to them getting to Rio de Janeiro.
Yes.
But
because they like teleport.
The anti-gravity fight, yeah. That was a cool set piece and, you know, interesting idea and moment and stuff. So yeah, I think that's a big problem when you have like, you know, you're supposed to be leading up to something that's so epic and awesome, and it's kind of like, eh, what we saw earlier was cooler. So,
yeah,
you know, that leaves a bad taste in your mouth almost. But yeah, so like the monster stuff was cool. Pacing was lightning fast. My problems are the same as yours. The all of like the story stuff and revelations are like super rushed and all told through exposition. Like they literally find like these cave paintings and then it goes into a story of like, this is what happened and this is who this person is. And it's just like the writing is like so, you know,
yeah,
bad at that part. But I do think they're kind of like leaning into that aesthetic where it's just like, you know, dumb fun and we're not really going to waste time trying to like show all of these things and have like all these long backstories and stuff. Cause yeah, then the movie probably would have been closer to 3 hours instead of two.
Yeah.
And people just want to see the action and the fights and stuff, but it still takes away from it a little bit, especially when like the introduction to, you know, the big bad and just like that whole sequence was kind of weird. And then the reveal of who helps them too, like that, you know, I guess it's not spoiler to say, I think it's online everywhere that it's, you know, Mothra is in this movie. And like her introduction and everything was just like kind of lame and anticlimactic also.
Mm-hmm.
So like anything surrounding like Godzilla and Kong was cool, but they try to introduce these other kaiju and monsters and like it falls flat. And that could have been cooler. Like the beast that, you know, Scar King has tamed or uses controls was a cool idea. Like, to kind of even the level the playing field.
Mm.
But I really didn't understand how that, like, they don't really do any kind of explanation or anything of how that crystal works, like that he's controlling her with.
Oh yeah. And I honestly, they said like it controls through pain, but
yeah,
we didn't really know, like, what,
how does that happen?
I honestly thought, like, I don't know if I didn't look into it. I don't know if you did, but is that like an actual part of like the whole MonsterVerse? Because this has existed for like a while.
Like that one specifically, that kaiju?
Yeah.
It's not one that I'm familiar with, but I haven't seen a lot of like the old movies. But I know that like the universe is like so big. So like even there could be ones that have never shown up in a film before that are technically connected to the lore. I don't know if it's an original creation for this movie or not, but not that it really matters, but.
Yeah, I just, I only say that because I felt like the design of it was worse.
What? Oh, worse.
Than yeah. like, than like Kong. Kong and Godzilla feel like more rounded out, like Titans. And then this one just felt like it was like some dumb, like stupid. I don't know. It just felt like it was dumb and I don't know. It just felt more simple, I guess. But
yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, I feel like it's basically supposed to be the antithesis of Godzilla, like ice versus he has like radiation or heat breath or whatever. And he walks on all, it's like quad pedal. Is that what it's called? When he walks on all fours.
Quadruped. Yeah. Quadruped.
And Godzilla's bipedal. And yeah, just like, you know, those obvious connections.
Was it named Shimo?
Shimo. Yeah. Yeah.
That is a fucking. It's the mother of all Titans.
Oh. Okay. I feel like that should have been like a bigger deal then. This is what I'm saying, where it's very anticlimactic.
Yeah, very definite. Like, you wait.
Like, she literally was. Or didn't they say in the lore she brought about the Ice Age? And then.
Something like
at
that.
The end,
yeah.
That's what they try to do again, and Godzilla stops it. But yeah, just. Again, anything with Godzilla and Kong, really cool. Fun to watch. But yeah, all the surrounding, supporting, even monsters and characters are just pretty weak. And then, I mean, it's a pretty lame criticism because everybody agrees, but like the human stuff is pretty bad too.
Yeah.
Like the whole, you know, like the doctor worried about losing her daughter to because she's like never felt like she belonged. I'm like, well, I wonder why. It's because you're being raised by this person who's hunting or treating kaiju all the time. But yeah, like the girl too. I hate the overacting, like the over facial expressions, just because like she's deaf. It feels like she has to like over emote in her face.
Yeah,
it just feels like super unnatural.
Yeah, and it'd play like a corny, like high school, like Disney Channel movie score.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did like the addition of Dan Stevens. I mean, I always think he's fun.
Yeah.
He felt like he knew what movie he was in.
Yeah, he does like pretty. Him and Wingard worked together pretty well. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, The Guest was great. Like that scene, that one scene in particular. But I was just reading about this Shimo bitch. There's a lot of fucking. Storyline. So she's definitely a huge thing, but it just literally says the same thing. Like there's like this wiki, a Monsterverse wiki now, obviously, mm-hmm. and it's just saying like it just causes her immense pain. So it's like it's mm-hmm. half baked itself, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's, unless they would have created something.
Right. I don't really know what like I wanted from it, but it just seemed like a weird.
Yeah, like almost it should like have been like a shard of her
plot device
spine or something that like.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
a piece of her ribs that whenever he controls it, it causes pain where her rib used to be or something dumb like that.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, it would have made more sense than just like. Pointing it, like grabbing it, pointing it at her.
And he just like holds it like fucking Voldemort's.
Dude, he does. Yeah, he wields it like a spell. Wand. It's pretty funny.
Oh my God, oh Jesus. But yeah, I mean,
yeah,
what you're saying, the human part. I honestly think that the first one, story wise, definitely mm-hmm. was better. Or when I say first one,
Godzilla
I'm referring
Kong.
To Godzilla versus Kong, this new Godzilla Kong iterations.
Yes.
But yes, it does not compare. None of them do to the first Godzilla still.
Yeah. I mean, even Kong Skull Island, like, I don't love that movie, but the human stuff is better in that for sure. And, like, the aesthetic of that, too. I know that one's not Adam Wingard, but it kind of is, like...
Yeah, it feels like...
At least a little similar to these. Who directed that again?
Jordan Voight Roberts.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I don't know who that is. But he's making a Gundam movie, which might be fucking sick.
Yeah, I think he was like an indie director.
Age of the Kings of Summer.
Yeah, hasn't really done...
Successful Alcoholics.
Hmm. Okay, anyway.
But yeah, this that aesthetic definitely feels in this new world.
Yeah, like this one goes way heavier on the neon and the 80s aesthetic, but yeah, it definitely feels connected, so.
Yeah, that movie poster is so good.
Kong Skull Island?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty nice. I do like that. Yeah, I don't have too much else to say, honestly. I mean, it's exactly what you expect. If you've seen the trailer, you've seen most of the movie. You're just extending the fight scenes out at that point. But, anything else for you?
No. It's exactly what you think it'd be.
Yeah. Okay, well, what are you going to give Godzilla Kong the New Empire?
I am actually giving it a 3. I think it's worse than the first for me.
Okay. Well, I think I gave Godzilla Kong
a 3.
And I think, yeah, I do think that one's better. I think Kong Skull Island is better. But this is definitely better than Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yes, all of
which
them
I gave
are.
A 2. Or, sorry, a 1 star. So I'm going to give Godzilla Kong a light 2.5.
Yeah, I could feel that.
Okay.
I have to give the half star bump.
The Wingard bump.
Yep.
The Wingardian Leviosa bump.
The Wingardian Leviosa, exactly.
Okay, cool. Well, should we talk about Quiet on the Set?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. So we both watched this. This is a documentary mini series, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's mini series technically, because there's supposed to be a fifth episode coming out.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh, so we won't even be able to talk about it in full. Okay, so I thought it was done.
No, I just heard that they're releasing another one in like June or something.
Oh, wow. That flung apart. Okay. Yeah, 5 episodes. Why would they do that? No, April 7th.
Okay. I mean, I'm tripping.
Okay, so 5 episodes. All right, well, we've seen the first 4.
Yes.
And go ahead and start. Thoughts?
Yeah, so spoilers, if you guys haven't seen it or it already hasn't been spoiled for you on TikTok, which it wasn't for me. So we'll openly talk about this. Because there is definitely a spoiler if you didn't know, and I definitely did not.
Mm-hmm.
So, Quiet on Set is focusing on the, I guess, late 90s to mid 2000s Nickelodeon's like golden era, featuring shows like Drake and Josh, all that, The Amanda Show, Double Dare, pretty much all of the shows you grew up on if you're a millennial. And
yeah,
anywhere from
and watch Nickelodeon.
Yeah, if you're in your 30s or upper 20s, you definitely grew up on these. And you basically find out that it's all fucked, like everything about it. And it's like you're so naive. Obviously you would never expect it, but even when we were that age, and you just feel like, oh my god, like I love this shit. And then you find out like the sexual harassment cases and then the treatment of these kids that was absolutely insane how poorly they were treated. And then you find out fucking one of the pickle guy from fucking whatever show he was on. Like what was he technically? Acting coach?
Yes. Yeah, so and like a production assistant or something.
He was on a lot of sets, and he was also an actor in some. He like acted in some episodes, but
yeah,
you find out that he had this relationship with Drake Bell that seemed okay at first, and then everyone comes to find out that Drake was just getting absolutely sexually abused to like the nth degree, and to watch that and not and not be spoiled for me, like, was like, it's so insane. I don't think I said one word that entire episode.
Yeah.
It just throws you for a loop and you don't expect it. And I mean, that's like, this is like the kind of documentary that you hope does something, but it's not gonna, because nothing's changed really. But
well, I mean,
maybe. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I guess I don't know how different, like working conditions are and sets on kids shows now, but you would hope and think that these things, you know, would spark some outrage and some more oversight, especially from parents. I mean, this was back. This was 30 years ago or 20 years ago now. You know, and parents were naive at the time too. They just let their kids be free on these sets, and, you know, they thought everybody had the best intentions for them, but really it was the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, it's just manipulation of parents. And another documentary that I'm going to be talking about is the exact same situation. So it's like they just prey on these parents that are easily manipulated, and they're usually in a certain mindset, and they just want so much success for their kids that they're just like obsessed with how can I make my child's life like exactly what they want. And they hear like whatever they need to hear, and once they're hooked, they're hooked. And that didn't happen to Drake Bell's dad.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, Drake was manipulated enough to have his father not be his manager because he was in an abusive relationship with his acting coach. It was absolutely insane. And everything about it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, so I mean, that definitely is like one of the crazier parts. And they, you know, I think they intentionally wait till episode 3 to bring him in and tell his story. But we should touch on the beginning in the first two episodes is more about what's his name? Dan Harmon?
Dan Schneider.
Dan Schneider, sorry, not Dan Harmon. So don't want to
yeah.
Little Dan Harmon's name like that. Yeah, Dan Schneider. One of the, you know, basically the creative drive behind a lot of these shows was just like super misogynistic and a creep himself. And it wasn't only the kids, but like the treatment of women, you know, in the workforce was terrible too. And he would, you know, use his power and wield it over them. And, you know, everybody was doing these crazy things and nobody would go against him, because if it did, then that means you would, you know, lose your job. And it's funny because like every time something would happen, it would like the text on screen would come up and say, reach out to Schneider, and he like denies all allegations of this. And like every time it was that same thing. Like he denies any knowledge or this allegation or whatever. So
yeah.
But it's pretty clear that, you know, he knew what he was doing and you know, let that power go to his head. And yeah, it's just like it kind of goes from there, because that was the start of these shows and like, you know, the people he surrounded himself with. And there was that other production assistant too that was a creep, who I think he was the one that was preying on the younger girls,
like 12 year olds.
And sent that email with the photo or whatever. That was so
It sounded like a dick pic.
Just like him naked, like, oh, I'm thinking about you. But
I thought you would want to see this or something.
Yeah, I thought, yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Make your skin crawl. But yeah, it's interesting because it goes from, it does a good job of like going from one story seamlessly to the next, and just like how they're connected and these people are connected.
Yeah, it does a very good job of doing that and keeps you interested every episode. And
It kind of follows the timeline too of like, you know, like I said, the inception and where these kids started with all that, and then like going into the Amanda Show when they were getting older, and then Drake and Josh was after that. And yeah, it kind of follows like the real life timeline, and then follows these Yeah, yeah, the growth of all these creeps and pedophiles that were surrounding them the whole time.
Yeah, there was three of them at least, like, that were involved, and you're trying to deny any knowledge. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
When you're especially when you're, what he was doing too, it's like, he fucking knew. And he's just sitting free.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I think the other two are, or one was arrested. They both might have been arrested. I don't know if one of them's out or whatever. Like, the timeline of the arrest and time served, I don't know that, or I can't remember if they mentioned that. But yeah, Dan Schneider never, I don't think any charges were ever brought against him, which, nope. I don't know. I guess I don't know what they could charge him with, because, right. I mean, he was a creep and just, like, misogynistic and treated people bad, but I don't know if they ever had any, like, hard evidence against him.
Yeah, I don't think they did.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Right. Yeah, more so should have just been, like, executives at Nickelodeon should have done something rather than, like, you know, maybe he didn't do anything illegal, but his, like, work life was just, yeah, he should have been canned.
Yeah, they could have said something.
With success in that, you know, he was bringing in huge ratings and everything. So that's just fucked up that, you know, they would allow that to happen just for more money.
Just for more money.
Yep.
That's the craziest part, yeah. It's all for money.
So yeah, episode 5 comes out April 7th, and that's in, well, I guess,
next week?
Sunday. Maybe yeah. It'll be out, and we can talk about it next week.
I hope they release it like Sunday at midnight, so you can, you know, you can wake up and be able to view it that day.
Yeah.
Or actually, I think it's actually going to be airing live, maybe.
Right, like a time. They'll pick a time and then air it, and it'll be available like immediately after or something.
Yep. I don't know when. It just says April 7th, so.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Okay. What else you got?
Just kind of going off of that a little bit, I mentioned another documentary that I watched, and it was a Netflix original called The Program. And that one is absolutely insane, too. Like, these
troubled...
You should definitely watch it. Like, it is about these, like, troubled teen camps or, like, facilities that... people to, like, send their kids to, and like, they think that they're like gonna train them to, or like heal them and like practices, so their parents just send their kids away, and then they actually, like, I don't want to spoil too much, but they actually, like, pay the program to, like, abduct them basically, and then they take them to these places, and then they're there for months on end, literally dealing with torture. Like, they are so tortured, and the shit that they do, you will be, like, blown away by what these kids went through. Like, stuff that, like, prisoners don't even go through. It's so bad, and they're just so fucking, they're just invincible. Like, there's nothing out there to stop these from happening.
Why? Because the parents give permission?
Yeah, and they're just like, they'll create one, and then they'll create another, and this one guy is like the head of the entire organization, but he has, the way that he is, everything's been written up, nothing can be tied to him. So it's like a legal genius. To where he's going to just, like, pretty much be scot-free from it. It's so, like, and they dive deep into this. And the girl that directed it also was a victim herself. So you get, so, like, a first-hand account
from
what she dealt with. And then all of these other kids that were in the same program, she gets them to talk about it. And what they went through on a daily basis, and there's difference between boys and girls and what they had to do and stuff. And it's actually insane. Like, it's so good. like good and like it's bad, but good. It's interesting. Highlighting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
it's like incredibly interesting. And then like it, right. It ends like very, very good too. So it's a great documentary. I think it's.
Yeah. The last episode is the highest rated.
It's definitely something that everyone should see.
Hmm.
For sure. So
yeah, I don't usually get into these docuseries, but definitely looks interesting, and I'll watch it based off of your recommendation.
Yeah, some of these things are like just you just like want to be interested in. You like watch them and you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Cool, check it out. All right, I watched finally Blood Simple.
Oh yeah.
The first Coen film. Partially inspired by Emmett Walsh's passing. And then Travis is like, oh, you got to watch Blood Simple. It's amazing. So I'm like, all right, let's watch this piece of shit. kind of messed up. I watched it, kept trying to watch it at night, kept falling asleep, took 3 sittings to watch it. So I will admit from the jump, not ideal circumstances. But I finally did finish it. And I think it is fine. It's very simple story, you know, crime drama. It's one of those plans that go wrong, you know. And it definitely has Coen flair to it, albeit very early, and kind of you definitely see the seams more in this one. And you know, it's not perfect. It's not No Country for Old Men.
Yeah,
but it is very watchable. And there's like great parts, and then there's parts that are kind of a slog to get through. And they kind of come in, you know, every other. So like there'll be a great part, and then it's like, okay, it's kind of a slog to get through, and then great part. So keeps you going, keeps you strung along for the watch. But yeah, overall, I would say the dialogue isn't as strong in this either as their other films. I don't think the lead is very great. What's his name? John Getz as Ray. I just don't find him intriguing at all. Really like Emmett Walsh as the private investigator. And Dan Hedaya as Marty. Frances McDormand's in it. She's pretty young, early role, maybe. She's fine in it too. Nothing spectacular. But those two are pretty good. Yeah, overall, liked it. Didn't love it. I will say the end is pretty good. They do some cool stuff with lighting and yeah, I'll just leave it at that because I know you haven't seen it, but I would like to revisit it with fresh eyes and watch it in one sitting. And it is only 97 minutes. So I don't know if that's a testament that I couldn't finish it or it was me. I'll put the blame on me for now, but I would give it like a 3.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Gonna catch some heat for that one, I'm sure.
Well, I figured I should start low. That way it can only go up. Because I do think it would go up, but it's definitely not a 5 banger. Like I think there's parts I missed too. Cause I was like, okay. So there's a scene where Ray like cleans up a murder that he had nothing to do with. And I'm like, why would he be like cleaning this up? And he like does like a shitty job too. And I'm like, why is he doing this? And then I like had to look up the synopsis. I was like, oh, because he thinks Abby is the one that did the murder. So he has to, you know, clean it up. And yeah, I definitely put the blame on myself. Like, cause they do a lot of showing and not telling. And, you know, if you're following along, it's a lot easier to obviously get the whole story. So,
right.
Totally on me on that, but yeah, would like to rewatch it.
I just have one quick one. Did watch a movie I forgot to log. Imagine that.
All right.
But I watched Stuart Gordon's Reanimator. 80s cult classic.
Yes, it's totally a Josh pick.
It is a very Josh pick. I was in the mood for 80s horror, and this is one of those that is supposed to be like quintessential 80s horror. So based on a Lovecraft book, whatever he did, Lovecraft idea. And it was exactly an 80s movie. Like, I'm not going to go too deep in it, but it was very like cult, like it falls right in cult classic. Like, it was very corny, but like some of the makeup, like some of the practical effects back then were like pretty crazy. I know like practical effects nowadays are a lot better, but 80s like went no like balls to the wall with practical effects, and some of the shit that you're like, how the hell did they do this? And this is one of those, like, there's this one of the main characters is like becomes just a head, and like he has like his body's walking around holding his head, but it like never, it's never CG, so it's like, so sometimes it looks like he's literally holding his head, and I don't know where the rest of his body is, but it's actually his real head because he's like talking and stuff. And then other times, obviously, it's from behind, so he's holding like a practical head of his. But yeah, it's pretty crazy what they were able to do back then. But corny, like he has like this like syringe, so basically he brings dead things back to life as long as it's within a 6 to 12 minute window, like before they actually die. And he like injects him with this vial, and it's literally like this glowing neon green, like huge syringe that he has to stab into the brain stem or something to like bring them back to life. And it's just funny how it's like has to be like neon green, and the syringe is like,
oh yeah,
fucking massive, you know. And there's times when it like you can see it like them like not do it right, and so it just has like those like bloopers that are charming in a sense. But people love this thing. I still can't forgive it for a lot of the execution, I guess. So it's a fun watch, but some people like love this thing, and I think it's good, but it's not one of my favorites yet. So I'm interested to really watch it again. It is only like 86 minutes, so it's quick as hell.
Yeah. So 124. Yep.
So yeah, very quick to watch. So I'll watch it again, I'm sure. Maybe in October for my horror movie extravaganza, because you got to find those short movies to throw in. Oh, so. Yeah.
If you're going for the 31 days, the 31 days, you definitely need some shorties in there.
But yep, so I think it's a 3.5. Could potentially go up, but
okay.
I know Travis, you gave it a 4.5. Don't see that yet, but it was still very enjoyable.
Yeah, is it pretty low budget? Is that like,
I would assume?
Anything? Okay.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it had much behind it.
Yeah. Is it better than or what's that movie called? The Cronenberg. God damn it. What was the first one that we watched?
Scanners?
Scanners. Is it better than Scanners?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know what I gave it, but it definitely feels like better. And there's a lot of dong in this. So,
ooh, now we're talking. Why didn't you start? I guess
it was 900,000 budget for back in the 80s. So I don't know what that would be in like today's.
Still probably pretty low.
But still like it's still micro budget. So under what, 2.5 million is, or under 5 million is a micro budget technically?
I have no idea the exact number. I mean, I'm sure it would change.
We looked it up based on this,
the year also.
I think we looked it up on the pod.
Well, then fucking to go back to that episode and listen. I don't know.
Let's see if I can find it. Oh, micro budget are $400,000 or less.
Oh, so, and that would be current, probably.
Yes.
So it was definitely not micro back then.
So it's probably just small budget, which is
that's what I'm, like
5 to 20 million. So it would be less than 5 million.
Maybe. Inflation's a bitch.
Yeah.
Just that. Could be more. Okay, do you have anything else? All right, neither do I. So let's shut her down. Next week is, what did we say?
Monkey Man? Monkey Punch?
Oh, yeah, Monkey Man. Ish, Monkey Man. Another monkey movie. Should have saved Mass Appeal for that. Oh, yeah, rating on Mass Appeal. Taste the banana a little bit more. Still not very strong. I'm going to go 4.25 for this one.
Still good.
Very solid stout. Okay, next week, Monkey Man. Not doing anything else featured, but yeah, we'll see. Because I know you wanted to see Late Night with the Devil too, right? And I kind of
want
to see
I want to.
But I don't know if we'll be able to string together a feature for that if we have time. Because that's a theater watch. So
I might try and sneak in tomorrow if they have a...
Well, there you go. Let me know, because I can go any day for free.
That's true.
So possibly that. But yeah, definitely Monkey Man.
Definitely.
Pretty excited. Pretty excited for that. I think it looks decent. Oh, I was going to bring this up earlier, too. Now we're in the outro. Correction on last week's pod. Huge, embarrassing moment for myself when I said that the score was very Nicholas Winding Refn, because I said that it's the same guy that does the score for Love Lies Bleeding as NWR's movies, and that's why they felt similar. But Clint Mansell did Love Lies Bleeding, and not Cliff Martinez.
Cliff Yikes. Mansell is,
Aronofsky's boy.
Aronofsky's boy, yep.
Exactly. So, egg on my face for that, but, you know, they're both CM, same difference.
Yeah,
they're mixed up all the time.
Both Clint or Cliff or whatever.
Yeah, well, I knew it started with a C.
You got that.
Okay, next week, Monkey Man, get hyped. In the meantime, if you want to send us a question or comment, you can email us at sudsandcinemapodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at sudsandcinemapodcast. I am on Letterboxd and Untapped at the KG Project.
And I'm on both of those platforms at josh_saldana.
All right, thanks for listening.
Cheers, guys.